All right, welcome to APS Radio number 4. With me today, Major Alice Breger. Good afternoon, dear.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Oh, I am in hour 5 of the second round of the Moderna COVID vaccine, so I'm feeling good right now.
You feel good now. We'll see how you feel tomorrow.
Well, I feel like I'm just sort of in a relaxed state. I don't know if it's because my immune system is ramping up for a cytokine storm or it just somehow relaxed me, but we're just gonna go with it.
All right. And I like it. You're wearing a Browns
That's
hoodie.
right. I know.
We're taping this a little bit early. We just had a Super Bowl last night. So, and your Browns did put up more of a fight.
They did put up a fight against the Chiefs, but I was cheering for Tom Brady. I mean, come on. Greatest of all time. The man needs to write a book on leadership. And sure, you can knock him about Deflategate, but come on, Sun Tzu's Art of War. That's all that was, is deception at its finest, using the Art of War tactics.
What is that? 7 champions he had? Championships?
That was his seventh Super Bowl appearance, and I believe his sixth Super Bowl win, right?
I think 7th win, but you know what? It doesn't matter because Ric Flair has 16 championships, and that's all that matters. Woo!
That is true.
All right, so
Rollins needs to catch up with him, but yeah.
yes. Yeah, so let's go through your whole little background if you don't mind, which is going to take up half the episode itself.
Sure.
Grew up in Youngstown, Ohio.
That's right. Good old yo.
Former paper girl, right? Past champion at Connect Four.
Actually, I was really terrible at that game.
Okay, all right. Some of these are not true. First female pole vaulter in the state of Ohio.
That is true.
Bachelor degree in science and psychology from Brown University.
Yes, sir.
Where is Brown University?
It is in Providence, Rhode Island. I used to think it was in New Jersey until my parents dropped me off and I realized I was in Rhode Island and not New Jersey.
All right, while you were there, you were a Division I athlete in track and field. All right, then you decided to go back to Ohio to Kent State.
Sure did.
Doctorate in psychology, no, physiology.
Physiology, yeah.
Even in my big print, I can't read. You then became a research professor at Morehouse School of Medicine.
I sure did.
And then a U.S. Army neuroscientist and recruiter.
Well, recruiter is a loose term, but I do work for the recruiting command now.
Yeah, and that's actually the next thing is you are officially certified in TikTok and a Snapchatter.
Oh, yeah. Well, I did have to receive training on that because, yes, the Army.
She has continuing ed in TikTok and Snapchat.
I hate to admit it, but yes, it's true.
With all the social media stuff, she still prefers MySpace. Is that true?
Yeah, Tom is still one of my best friends.
Yes. You then became chief of the Sleep Research Center at the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research. That sounds pretty damn official.
Yeah, they're a pretty amazing team over there. I miss them a lot.
We're going to talk a lot about that stuff.
For sure.
You competed in the first CrossFit Games.
Well, not the first one. My teammate from college competed in the first one. I competed in the sixth and the eighth one as on
Okay.
a
What happened to number 7?
I went as an individual and only made it to regionals, which is
Okay. All
still pretty good.
right. Sorry, I had to bring that up.
Okay.
You are a part of the O2X sleep specialist,
I
part of the
sure.
O2X team.
Absolutely.
Those guys are awesome, those guys and gals.
They're phenomenal.
You are an author, Meathead and Off Colored Rainbows.
Yep.
And then you, like you said, you received your COVID shot today, number 2.
Number two.
All right. We're getting there good. She would probably not want to do this tomorrow. At least that's how I felt. I felt like crap. Same shot. I had COVID just like you. It didn't go well, day 2 for me. But it affects everybody differently.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I had COVID, but I had all the symptoms before we actually knew what COVID was, because I basically all of last January and February followed patient zero, that lawyer from New Rochelle, around the country. And my best friend lives in New Rochelle, like a few blocks from him. So I'm pretty sure I had it before we knew what it was.
Yeah. And you spent a ton of time in New York too.
I did. Yes. Yeah. So I like to think I developed some super antibodies in New York. We were there. It was a no-knock deployment. We got called out the end of March. Didn't have any idea when we were coming back, but we ended up coming back towards the end of May.
Nice. And you even got to go on, and I forget the ship name, but you were at kind of that hospital base that's on the sea, basically?
Yeah, it was serendipitous I got to go on that. So I ran the COVID lab inside the field support hospital, and we were constantly like at critically low levels of supplies. And honestly, I don't know what we would have done if I didn't drive my Jeep to New York, because I felt like most days we were driving my Jeep to pull up to the comfort. And then my other Army battle had a friend from the Navy, because he used to be in the Navy. So between his connection and my Jeep, I'm not sure what we would have done with the critically low supplies, but we made it happen. And, you know, as serendipity would have it, I got to go on the comfort a few times, just couldn't take any pictures for operational security reasons.
Do you want to real quick kind of discuss what the comfort is?
Yes. So in my humble opinion, the USS Comfort is the most amazing feat of human engineering. It's basically a fully functioning hospital on a ship. They can do neurosurgeries. They can do cardiothoracic procedures, just any sort of high level complex procedure you would have done in a prestigious, you know, New York, Boston, Dallas hospital is done on a ship in the middle of the ocean.
That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So
much better than that.
Yes. No. So let's kind of get to the gist of why I kind of suckered you into doing this to begin with. Let's talk about sleep. It's kind of what you do. You do other things too, but let's talk about sleep.
Yep.
Why? Do what?
I also love to sleep. I do practice what I preach.
As soon as we get done, she's going to take a nap.
For sure.
Yeah. So why is sleep so important?
Well, sleep has many universal functions, and you know, the bluff is if you don't sleep, you become very unhealthy, you become very sick. And as they have shown in animal models, they have shown that animal models basically die when they're deprived of sleep. It's important for replenishing energy restores. It's important for clearing toxins from the brain. It's important for learning new information and retaining it the next day. It's important for our emotional and psychological health. I can go on and on and on. It is absolutely important. And we know, unfortunately, like you as a firefighter and me as military, we know it's important when we're without it, right? Like sleep deprivation is the worst form of torture. Like, and so that right there just shows just how critical it is.
So kind of talking about the military and sleep, for the longest time, part of just military training was sleep deprivation, you know, putting yep. you out there and, you know, this is how it could be when you're out in the field and you're 48 hours, whatever it may be, give or take hours where you're awake and you're expected to function. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, that happens a little bit, but for the most part, they've kind of went a different way with that. And I know your team was a big part of changing that. Could you kind of go into that if you don't mind?
Absolutely. So yeah, there are some military training exercises that are so historically rooted and traditional to the military, such as Ranger School training, right? Like the fact that those cadets are sleep deprived for 72 to 96 hours nonstop, even though we know all the negative consequences of sleep deprivation, there are certain traditions that or selection processes that will not change. Even select marksmanship exercises downrange on a mission. I was part of one where we are essentially awake for 60 hours. We were with the 1st Armored Division out of Fort Bliss, and we rolled out right outside of Kuwait, did a marksmanship exercise for 48 hours. But again, you, in order to prepare for war, you have to train for war, right? And so sometimes you have to do it, because when you're in that real world situation, what are you gonna do then if you've never experienced it before? But those are the unique cases, right? For the most part, what our team has been very instrumental in is education and implementing ways that soldiers can get the best sleep possible when they're not doing these crazy missions. So how can we best improve their sleep downrange and theater, given all the constraints? Myself, when I was in Kuwait, we slept in a shipping container next to a flight line. Like, you talk about trying to get good quality sleep, even when you were really sleep deprived, it was impossible. So in a situation like that, you know, we would advocate for noise canceling headphones or white noise machines or something to dampen the noise of the airfield in the background. Now, in garrison, back home in theater, it's all about proper sleep hygiene. So what you can do an hour before bed, 30 minutes before bed, and even, you know, 15 minutes before bed to make sure that you are in a position to get the best night of sleep possible.
How do you go about doing that?
So, it really is a process. And again, it's something that I preach and I practice, and so do a lot of my colleagues. So to me, the sleep routine schedule starts anywhere from 90 to 60 minutes before bedtime. And it begins with putting away all technology. So even in this day and age where we have blue light blocking glasses, I think people oftentimes use that as an excuse to keep being on their iPad or to keep watching Netflix or to keep texting up until the very minute they go to sleep. But that's not good, because it's stimulating the brain, right? Like, even if you're having a silly text conversation with your friend, it's still stimulating. It's not relaxing. So that's what you want to do. All technology away at least 60 minutes before bed. And then after that, it's doing things that are relaxing to you. Some people, it's listening to podcasts. Others, it's reading a book. Others, it's listening to music. Some do breathing exercises. My recommendation is to do...
I use my phone for all that. I use electronics for all that.
Well, there's such thing as Alexa. So you could just tell Alexa to turn on a certain podcast or, you know, play some Brahms or some Holst.
Okay.
Something like that.
Oh, okay.
Alexa,
but play AC/DC.
Hey, that, I mean, I love AC/DC, but I'm pretty sure that's not optimal to listen to before bedtime.
Probably not. Anyway, as you were, sorry, I was rude.
Oh, no, you weren't rude at all. But you want to do all of this besides, you know, you don't want to listen to AC/DC under dim light. And the reason for that is because we naturally release this hormone from our pituitary gland called melatonin. And exposure to dim light augments melatonin release. And then some people, like I do this myself, I take a hot shower. And then if I've like really, really trashed myself from training, sometimes I will take an over-the-counter sleep supplement. Here and there, melatonin when I'm traveling. But I advocate for sleep supplements as a last resort. You know, that's one thing I think us in the sleep community like to emphasize, is you want to make all these behavioral changes first. And then if you still need a little bit of help to coax your brain into a better stage of sleep, then maybe advocate for melatonin or one of the other over-the-counter plant-based sleep hypnotics. We try to get people away from Ambien, Lunesta. There are actually government orders from the military now that soldiers are no longer able to get Ambien and Lunesta on a long haul flight to Afghanistan, and even a prescription for it is much more difficult these days than it used to be in years past.
I can attest to using that and having a pretty bad time a couple times. So basically sleepwalking through an airport, that actually happened. So
yeah, no, it's really scary. You know, a lot of those strong hypnotics like Ambien and Lunesta, they stay in your system for up to 16 hours. And as the data shows in the laboratory, it's basically the equivalent of having a blood alcohol content of 0.08 or higher. So you're basically, you were legally drunk walking through the airport, which, I mean, it's probably better to do that, you know, drinking Great Lakes ale, but you know.
Look at you. Somebody's been in Cleveland Airport before.
I have.
Yes.
Or Rheingeist, where you are. That's actually, I've gotten, I like that beer. I've gone to the brewery in Cincinnati.
It's pretty cool place. Yes. How much should we actually be sleeping?
So great question. The human average is 8.4 hours a night. And that basically comes from thousands and thousands of population data points, where we're looking at sleep across different cultures and different communities, different races, different ethnicities. So that's the average. The National Sleep Foundation, most like governing bodies, say 7 to 9 hours is the sweet spot. So you fall somewhere along that spectrum. I'm about a 7.5 hour person. I know that because right now I fortunately am in a position where I can get good quality sleep at night, and it doesn't matter like how much I've trained the day before or how much I've, you know, pushed myself psychologically. I always wake up after I get 7.5 hours. So I myself know that's my set point. Some people unfortunately are like 9, 9.5 hours. It's just one of those things with
you
trial.
Find me one of those people. I don't think they exist.
I mean,
they're going to be my next guest.
Yeah.
How do you sleep 9.5 hours every day, sir?
I know that's, I mean, there's probably people out there who need that, but they're not in the opportunity. They don't have the opportunity in their career to actually get that.
Do they have a career?
Well, that's the thing. They probably have a career. They're just chronically sleep deprived because they can't get the amount of sleep. And how you test for that is you look at stimulant use across the day. So if you have somebody who's like getting 8 hours of sleep at night and say they, you know, don't have a sleep disorder and they're still tired, then they're probably, unfortunately, one of those people who needs like 9.5, 10 hours of sleep.
Yes. So you mentioned it, so I'll go right to it. You said the magical words, sleep disorders. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of that with firefighters.
Oh, yeah. And military, too. I have two of them. So, yeah.
So I know just in my station alone, about half of the guys have CPAPs.
Yep.
And probably needs to be more than that even, doesn't it?
Probably. So the latest assessment of active duty populations, this is across the entire Army. Of active duty. So we're talking 500,000 soldiers. It was at 72%. And that even includes, this is a report we put out very recently in the journal Sleep Health, that even includes West Point cadets. So you're talking about like the cream of the crop, healthiest future military leaders who are only 18, 19 years old, about they're within the average standard deviation of sleep disorders. That's how prevalent it is. And we found the same too, actually. We published a paper last year in the Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research where we did a longitudinal assessment of sleep health in Division I football players at Towson University. And we found the same thing. About 70% of them fit the diagnosis for sleep apnea comorbid with insomnia. It's common even in like extremely fit and healthy individuals otherwise. Like I said, I myself, I'm 36. I have mild sleep apnea. I was not surprised when I was diagnosed because I've been an athlete and in the military. So I'm just, you know, another statistic.
How many times when they studied you did you stop breathing? And what is it, an hour? Or per minute, right?
No, it's per hour. So
per hour. Okay.
I'm very low on the spectrum. My index was 5. So I wake up about 5 times an hour. So there's different degrees. So
do you want to guess where mine was real quick?
All right. I'm going to say you have moderate and 14.
No, I'm pretty sure I was like 60 times
an hour. Oh, shit. So you had obstructive sleep apnea.
Yeah. I was every minute. Yeah. So for those out there who are having issues, I mean, could you even discuss, if you don't mind, like what are some of the, you know, side effects of not getting your sleep apnea in check?
Yeah. I mean, the biggest side effect is excessive daytime sleepiness. You just, this inability to stay awake and maintain alertness, even while driving a car, like that's as bad as it gets, right? Like if you are falling asleep at a stoplight, which, I mean, it happens, right? Like when you do those long 48-hour shifts, like your body just wants any opportunity to sleep.
The micro sleeps, is that what that's called?
Yeah, micro sleeps.
Yeah, and we're only driving, you know, million-dollar ladder trucks or,
yep,
or half-million-dollar engines, whatever it is. Right?
It's the same thing.
No big deal.
Right. And so that's where the risk runs. And actually, this is a lot of times why my team at Walter Reed, Army Institute of Research, that's a lot of times, unfortunately, when we were called out to help this particular unit, is there's some fatigue-related accident. Like a few years ago, we had some Ranger instructors who were coming down off their 40-hour shift from, you know, sleep depriving the cadets in the mountains. And two of them crashed into a tree on the way home because they, you know, like their system gave up. And it's because of those micro sleeps, which are that microsecond of sleep, like is life or death sometimes. And so that's why it's really, really critical at its worst to get your sleep apnea and your sleep disorders in check.
Nice. Good deal. Staying on this whole topic, there's lots of stuff on sleep I made notes for to talk to you about, because it's just, I know I can run all this stuff by you, can break it down to all the viewers and listeners there. So lack of sleep and the cancer and it kind of defeating the cancer killing cells, can you kind of touch on that too?
Sure. I mean, I know the research. I'm certainly not an expert in sleep deprivation and cancer biology, but I do know that it's most widely recognized and a concern in shift work. You know, they say that shift work now, I believe, takes 10 to 15 years off your life. And a lot of it is because of these increased incidences for cancer. Because again, sleep helps keep the body in check. It helps keep the immune system stable. It helps keep all those biological processes stable. And so when you're constantly sleep deprived and or shifting the system and providing this extra stress, it stresses the whole biological system.
Is it as simple as saying sleep is your body's opportunity to heal?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Absolutely. And when you're depriving yourself, I mean, you're not allowing it to heal. And that's why, you know, again, we're so prevalent and shift work in itself is a level, what, 2A probable carcinogen.
Yep, exactly. It has been, and that's from OSHA, right? I believe that it's.
IARC. Yeah. International Agency for Research on Cancer. I'm still staying on this topic. How important, I know you talk about this in O2X, but it's something I wish every department would have in their policy. What about safety naps?
Safety naps are key. And that's something now even with the military we've embraced. So much so that it's been included in the new field training manual called the Field Training Manual for Holistic Health and Fitness. And a nap 20 to 30 minutes a day does wonders for minimizing your sleep debt that you accrue from just, you know, the type of job you have. And two, it could possibly be the difference between life and death, right? Like, it can help minimize your sleep debt enough where you're not gonna, you know, fall asleep in your car or compromise the safety of you or your, you know, battles.
And I've seen a few places now where they actually have policy to where, like, basically lunchtime till around 1 o'clock is like off limits for training or doing anything else. Phone calls, I mean, nothing. The only thing that you take is actual runs if they come in, but other than that, that's your opportunity to rest.
Yep, exactly. So, I mean, and honestly, there's nothing wrong with doing like safety naps across the day or across the night. That's something that we implement and advocate for in our O2X training sessions. You can take 3 or 4 naps a day if you're in a position where you're going to be up for 24 plus hours, you know.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to send this to my boss so he can. Hey, we need like 4 naps, sir, please.
Well, I mean, you could send the new Army training manual. So it's FM 7-22, and we wrote chapter 11, which is all about sleep and strategic napping.
That's perfect. You know what we need to send that to for sure is about 3 years ago, I was in England. I was doing a tour of the different brigades there, kind of seeing what they do regarding firefighter cancer. And there was 2 large brigades there that they had gotten in a fight. The union had gotten in a fight with management, and management's way of retaliating was taking all the beds and throwing them in a warehouse. So it's just, you know,
torture. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So all these guys and gals had either had to bust out the air mattresses or their sleeping bags or sleep in some weird chair every night. Yeah, no beds at the firehouse.
That's terrible. Yes. I mean, there's select fire departments that I've visited where it's just, you see their sleeping conditions and you see, you know, when the state or the county invests in like the most cost effective, like bare minimum mattress just to cut costs. And I don't think that's the right strategy, because think of all the second order impacts it's going to have. You know, that's one of the things, like, you know, with our O2X seminars is and our workshops is we found, like, in the Boston Fire Department alone, it saved them $1.8 million in a year and workers' comp and all these health related issues just through the simple fact of having this sleep education and like different educational avenues through O2X.
That's amazing. Let's talk about some other things that are related to all this stuff. And you just kind of sound off on what your thoughts are. Weighted blankets.
So actually I don't sleep with one, but I do have, like, I wouldn't say a heavy comforter, but I don't know. My opinion's still not out on that until I see the actual peer-reviewed data. Most people I talk to, though, I haven't heard anything negative, right? So maybe a weighted blanket is just like with, you know, there's that debate about stretching. Does stretching actually reduce injury, or does it just stabilize injury? It doesn't increase injury.
Sure. You know,
so maybe weighted blankets are like that. It doesn't decrease sleep quality. I will say my dog absolutely loves the weighted blanket that I have. I have a friend from college. He actually has a weighted blanket company. It's called Rooster. And so far,
shameless plug, Rooster.
I am. It's a shameless plug for Henry's company. But Henry has worked really hard. He's talked to me and he's talked to a few of my colleagues. Like, he's trying to take an evidence-based approach. So
good. All right. What about sound machines?
Sound machines are amazing. I used to think they were gimmicky until We were involved with a study that the Army Surgeon General's office sponsored, where we found that this particular noise frequency called pink noise, it's very similar to white noise, but it's softer. That's why it's called pink noise. Actually changes the neural connectivity in one of the sleep circuits of the brain. It's called the thalamocortical loop. So there is evidence-based like neuroanatomical research to support it. I have a sound machine. I've had one for years now. If I don't have it with me when I travel, because I used to travel a ton before COVID, I used to bring it with me. But even this weekend, I was in a hotel and I didn't have my sound machine. So I used a pink noise app on my phone. They're legit.
Okay. There you go. Not busted, plausible. There you go. Plausible. I love that show. Testosterone.
Okay. We could talk about this all day. So, the biggest benefit or the easiest way for me to get those young invincible males in the military and, you know, football players and all the like who want to work hard, play hard, party hard, is to show them the data about what happens to plasma testosterone levels almost immediately under sleep deprivation. So there's been a wealth of studies done over the years, and they've been repeated on several occasions in different age groups and demographics of males to show that as soon as you stop getting about 70 to 80% of your daily sleep needs, so you're taking your sleep from 8 hours to 5 hours, there is an immediate drop in your testosterone to about 50%, and it doesn't come back up until you get good, adequate sleep again. So imagine a situation, and this is why there are firefighters and military personnel, and especially the special forces communities, you know, those guys do such rapid deployments. There's a reason why they're on low dose testosterone to stabilize their normal levels. And it's because of the long-term effects of sleep deprivation, hampering and hindering their normal testosterone secretion.
So I've got about the same, I think the same guys that have the CPAP machines at my station are the same guys that have to get testosterone every week.
So that would make sense because house sleep apnea, part of the diagnosis is you have this inability to enter the deepest, most restorative stages of sleep. So you can't enter what is called stage 3 non-REM sleep. And most oftentimes you don't enter REM sleep, which is the state of sleep when you dream. That's why a lot of times when people go on CPAP, they have this massive sleep rebound and REM sleep, and they start having like, they feel as if they've dreamt all night long. It's because of years and years of not being able to enter REM sleep. And now they have the ability to, because they can breathe again. Yeah. So they're going to have more of it, right? It's a delicate balance and a seesaw.
But are you also saying, correct me if I'm wrong, in about 5 years when I'm done and I can have a normal schedule, like a non, you know, just Monday, you know, I'm retired then. You're saying my levels will actually go up.
Yes. If you do everything right, if you listen to me and the others, O2X, and it should improve. I mean, once you're diagnosed with sleep apnea, you know, there can be improvements, but you know, if you were diagnosed with obstructive sleep apnea, chances are you're going to be using that machine for a very long time. But in terms of sleep hygiene, absolutely, you can work on that. And then not having shifted schedules and being on a normal 9 to 5, like 100%.
Nice. Something to look forward to.
Yes, exactly.
What about caffeine and energy drinks?
Oh, awesome question. So that's more or less like, I guess, my area of expertise and a lot of the work I do with the military is I've been involved with creating caffeine dosing schedules that can be used during like long missions. So ideas when you have to keep soldiers awake for 24 hours, 40 hours, 60 hours. And we've actually done some behavioral health studies to show that the caffeine source matters. So first and foremost, you should never at one point in time consume more than 200 milligrams at a single time. 200 milligrams is about a venti Starbucks. So think about like three cups of coffee, which is a lot, right? Like you don't want to ever exceed three cups of coffee at once. Problem is most energy drinks have more than 200 milligrams of caffeine. So you're already at a loss right there using energy drinks as a caffeine dosing source. The other thing is you want to space it out for about 3 to 4 hours. And if you do that, where you're consuming no more than 200 milligrams at a time for 3 to 4 hours, and say you have to be awake for 24, 40, 60 hours, you will, for the most part, like you're going to feel bad, obviously, when you hit like 40, 45, 50 hours of sleep deprivation, but you're still going to be like with it. Now, the problem becomes with energy drinks. So we actually have done a behavioral health study to show that if you are consuming two or more energy drinks a day, you actually are at a really great risk for PTSD, anxiety, and depression. And this wasn't a small scale study. This is done across an entire division of the Army, which is about 2,000 to 3,000 soldiers.
Well, I'm trying to think. Okay. So that two or more energy drinks a day, that's about half the firefighters out there too.
Oh, absolutely.
Plus coffee too.
It's soldiers too. But here's the thing, like, that rule doesn't really apply with coffee, because the problem with energy drinks is they have all these unnecessary chemical additives and compounds that basically, and this has been shown in animal models, it creates a condition known as neurotoxicity, where it's overstimulation of the brain. And so in response to overstimulation, the brain freaks out and prematurely kills off its nerve cells. It's called necrosis. So it literally, like, energy drinks literally kill brain cells.
That's awesome. It's great news.
Yeah. That's why, but it's of all, like, I guess my proudest accomplishment in my current position working with the Army esports team is, like, I've gotten most of them to not consume any energy drinks, which is great, because the esports culture is so ingrained in energy drinks, right? Like, all the major energy drink companies sponsor some esports team. And two, the soldiers who do still use energy drinks, they just know to like hide it when Major Brager comes walking in.
What about, is this kind of the same thing, anything to do with pre-workout?
Yeah, so pre-workout is the same thing. I mean, pre-workout has its like use case basis, right? If you're like competing, you know, I'll admit I took pre-workout this week. I was competing in a CrossFit competition this weekend, and our last workout, it was like our fifth workout of the day, and we needed to like go ham. So I took pre-workout. It had 400 milligrams of caffeine and anhydrous, and it did its job, but use case basis, right? Like, if you're in a situation, and this is true with energy drinks, where your safety's compromised because you are so sleep deprived, take it. But on a daily basis, like, this is where it becomes an issue. So we advocate for like using stimulants when it's absolutely necessary and safety is an issue, but not using them otherwise.
Okay. No, I follow you there. Now, let me ask you this, along the same lines of caffeine in general. Let's say my bedtime was 9 o'clock, which it usually, not when I'm home, that's usually around 10, but when I'm at the station, and I'm definitely the old guy at the station, it's 9 o'clock, you know, Good. Those guys know, like, all right, it's
early to bed, early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. Ben Franklin, right?
I'm working on it. When should be the last time, like, if my 9 o'clock sleep time, when should I stop drinking caffeine?
So at least six to 8 hours before you go to bed. The half-life of caffeine, I believe, is for energy drinks and coffee, it's about an hour to an hour and a half. If you're taking caffeine gum, like we have for our studies, it's 10, 20 minutes. But that's because it's going from the saliva directly to the brain. It's not being digested and then going to the brain like coffee and the energy drinks. But it's still going to be in your system for up to 6 to 8 hours.
Okay, I follow you. I don't know. I think that we have such bad habits at the firehouse. I don't think we follow that very well.
I mean, it's all about group mentality, right? And changing the culture. It's, you know, once one person does it, and then another person, it's just easier. It's the group think mentality, right?
What about retention?
Retention.
Just, I mean, whether it's physical or mental, how does sleep have to do with retention?
Oh, so much so. I mean, burnout, psychological burnout, that has been studied on several occasions between sleep deprivation and risk for psychological burnout. But it's the same with physical exhaustion too, right? Like all those studies now looking at sleep deprivation in athletes, especially like anaerobic athletes and aerobic athletes. It immediately impacts their performance. And I'm sure it's the same in you know, the tactical community too. We're a little bit behind in terms of formally studying it.
So speaking of studying, I know when I was studying for promotion, it was one of those stay up late and study, wake up early, study.
Yeah.
And knowing what I know now and knowing talking to you, I went about that the wrong way.
You weren't anything.
And that's why I'm still a firefighter. That's not the only reason, but.
No.
Yeah. Sleep would actually help me remember all that I was studying.
Correct? Absolutely. That's when we memorize information is in our sleep. I shouldn't say that. We actively memorize it, right, during the day, but then it's consolidated and stored and then repackaged for reprocessing when we sleep.
Okay. I follow you. All right. Now I want to kind of switch subjects now.
Okay.
And talk about the future.
The future. Okay.
The future. Yes. The final frontier.
Okay.
Let's talk about space.
Let's
talk about space. So you're in a running to be an astronaut.
Yes, I am.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I've always wanted to be an astronaut, you know, growing up in Ohio.
It's kind of what we do.
What we do, we have the most presidents, we have the most astronauts, and just, you know, you grow up wanting to be a president or an astronaut when you grow up in Ohio, right?
That's right.
I mean, that's what Wilbur Wright said, right? Find a good mother and father and start life in Ohio. Like
he's buried like 10 minutes away from me. Yeah.
Exactly. Too easy, right?
Yeah. Because we're first in flight, unlike Dina Ali's place. I just like to say that whenever I get a chance.
That is true.
North Carolina. Whatever. Cheaters.
But no, I you know, I've always been enraptured by space. And actually my great uncle, who's from Youngstown, Ohio, he was a program manager for the Apollo space mission. So when we would visit his house in the Chesapeake, like I saw all his mementos from meeting Armstrong and Aldrin and John Glenn. And I just always wanted to be an astronaut. I just didn't know how until this time last year.
How did this all, I mean, you said you always wanted to be this, but how did this actually become a possibility?
Actually, through mentorship from my current brigade sergeant major. He actually just retired. His name is Sergeant Major Stephen Lake. And this time last year, when he became our brigade sergeant major, he came in the gym and he's like, "Ma'am, you're going to be an astronaut." And I was like, "Sergeant Major, like, what are you talking about?" And he's like, "You know, they're going to have another call for the Army astronaut program. And I've been waiting for this." And he's like, "I saw your bio and like, you're perfect." So Sergeant Major worked on like helping me be vetted through the Army channels. And they had a nationwide call for astronauts around this time last year. So the idea was each branch of service got like 2 to 3 selections to then move forward to NASA. And then all the people applied from it, you know, that from the normal civilian world. And so I know as of right now, I'm one of those 2 to 3, like I'm on the short list. And I'm
out of how many?
I don't know, but it's a very short list.
Okay.
But I'm hoping.
No, but I mean, how many did you go against just to even get to this far?
So within the Army, I went against 12,000 people.
Okay. So you did all right for yourself.
Yeah. So, and they selected, I believe, 2 or 3 from those 12,000. So I know I'm in the 2 to 3. And I'm hoping I get invited for on-site activities soon. I sort of had a cryptic email that seems to be the case, but you know, I'm trying to stay hopeful, but at the same time, I'm grateful to have made it this far.
That's pretty cool. And you're perfect for it. Like it's David Bowie basically wrote a song for you.
I'm not gonna lie, like when I went for my flight physical this time last year, I definitely had space oddity playing. Especially since I'm a major, right?
Like perfect, yes.
And Major Brager, ground control to Major Brager, take your protein pills, which you know, I love taking whey protein after I train and put your helmet on. Like
yeah.
It's perfect.
You have a ready-made theme song.
By
David freaking Bowie.
David Bowie is already like one of the greatest artists of all times. Like he and Pink Floyd, right? Which we already had a discussion about, but
yeah.
But yeah, that would be my theme song when the space shuttle is going up.
I expect a video.
Oh, for sure.
I'm trying to remember who there was an astronaut not too long ago that did like a video of him singing that up there.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure it's been done like.
Yeah,
so many times now, and I follow all the astronauts on Instagram, so it's like awesome to see like the silly things they do in space, because I do that stuff back here on planet Earth. So
yes.
I think I'll find ways to keep myself entertained up there if I actually get the opportunity to go.
Well, yeah, that's gonna be cool, and if you do, you get to come on this show and tell us everybody about that.
Exactly.
Yes. So but part of this whole process is you're still going to have some interviews left, right?
Yes, absolutely. We're going to do some on-the-spot interviews.
So I want to do some of my 25 questions for you.
Okay, sweet.
To prep you. This is like, just prepping for that whole interview thing.
All right, let's do it.
All right. Pick a number 1 through 25.
21.
Favorite album.
Oh, Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon.
That's a good one.
At last Friday, we had to do this really long bike endurance workout. And I was like, this is the perfect album to listen to because it's 74 minutes long. And it's like you hit this like hallucinatory state throughout the workout. Oh, man, it was awesome.
Did you ever do the whole Wizard of Oz thing with it?
No.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I have. Maybe, you know what? Maybe when I'm like tomorrow, that's what I'm going to do when I'm lying, dying from the
COVID. Yeah. No, you can just go on. Technology is there for us. It makes it easier now. Before you had to sync the times with the record and the movie. Now you can just go on this place called YouTube and type it in, and it's all set up for you. And it is kind of freaky how the whole thing is set up. It's in sync with the movie.
Well, so actually The Wizard of Oz is my favorite movie. Well, I should say it's my favorite classic movie. My favorite movie is Basic Instinct, but my favorite classic is The Wizard of Oz.
Favorite play, Wicked?
No, it's actually not. I love Rent. Well, I think it's also because Rent is the first play I saw on Broadway.
That's pretty cool. Mine was Monty Python or Spamalot. Yeah, Spamalot.
Oh, Spamalot. That was a great one too.
Yeah. I'm that guy that likes that and like the Book of Mormon. And
oh, Book of Mormon was fantastic. I did not see that in New York. I saw that in Atlanta. But I love, that's like a Broadway soundtrack that I love listening to over and over again.
It's true. I know I'm supposed to at some point when we have live events again, I'm supposed to have tickets set up for Hamilton.
Okay. So my college roommate, college teammate, we were hurdlers and sprinters at Brown, is David Diggs, who is in the original Hamilton cast as Thomas Jefferson.
Oh, that's a great, he's a great character in there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he helped create and write. I mean, I shouldn't say write, but he helped write and rap, and he was in the original cast.
Very nice. That's so cool. Yep. You got cool friends everywhere. She was telling me before, she knows Seth Rollins from the WWE. And I mean, whatever.
Well, I got lucky meeting Seth Rollins.
Just, I'm glad I know you now before you're like too cool for me.
Hey, we could go to a WWE show together when Seth Rollins comes here, because you're not too far from me. Because that's usually what he does. He'll like text me, like he knows like where I live and where I moved to, and he'll text me and be like, "Hey, can we train together?" Because you know he's an avid CrossFitter, and so. That's how I met him, is through CrossFit.
Because you've got, correct if I'm wrong, Louisville has the Yum Center, which is a newer, new arena. And then you have Rupp Arena, which is pretty close to you too, which is a huge arena. Like that's like 22, 23,000 people.
Yep.
That's where UK plays. So.
Yep. I mean, and Cincinnati's not that far as well, you know?
No, not at all. That's almost the halfway point, give or take.
Exactly. So we'll go to a WWE match in Cincy. I'll just have to, when COVID's over, right?
Yeah. Well, you got your shots. I got mine. So hopefully soon enough, right?
Exactly.
Pick another number.
17.
Favorite actor or actress?
Ooh, well, I have to go. That's easy. Glenn Close. So Basic Instinct is my absolute favorite movie. I also love Fatal Attraction. I personally like Glenn Close. She wasn't my favorite actor until maybe 10 years ago. And she became my favorite actress because she actually spoke as the keynote at our annual Society for Neuroscience conference, which has like 40,000 people. And it turns out that she comes from a very strong family history of very severe psychological disorders, such as schizophrenia and bipolar. Like all her siblings, except for her, have either schizophrenia or bipolar. And so that's actually why she started acting, is because in playing the roles she does in Fatal Attraction and Basic Instinct and even Cruella de Vil, is because she wanted to like put herself in her siblings' shoes.
That's kind of cool.
That's so cool.
Nobody else knows the background. That's why I bring you on the show. For interesting facts like that.
But yeah, like since that day, like I have always loved Basic Instinct because, you know, it's like just so controversial. And then, you know, the classic scene with Newman, like investigating her. But then like after that, I was like, yes, she is my all time favorite actress.
Nice. How about we try to do one more? Pick a good one.
We'll do lucky number 7.
This is a deeper one. It could be deeper. I don't know. What is something popular now, but everyone will look back at it 5 years from now and think it's dumb or embarrassing?
Oh, that's so easy. TikTok.
TikTok. And this is coming from a TikTok specialist that has CUs in it.
I'm a TikTok specialist, but yes, I have.
You've been trained how to use it.
TikTok, yes.
Do you have a TikTok? Like, do you use? Or you just...
No, I don't. I don't have a single post. Well, I made one post on my TikTok account for our annual sleep conference happy hour because it was virtual this year. It was like all the hype about doing the outfit change with the mirror when you spray Windex on the mirror and then you take a towel and you wipe the mirror and then they're in a different outfit and then you wipe back and you're in a different outfit.
No, so, I don't remember that.
Anyway, I did a TikTok about that because I literally spend like half a year looking for like the like new conference clothes. So that's why I like to be fashion forward at conferences if I'm not wearing my military uniform.
Fair enough. No, that sounds good. I don't blame you. If anybody wanted to kind of track down what you've worked on or check, you know, not stalking, but get more information, no stalkers, please. Where could they find out more information about you?
So I am on Instagram quite often. That's actually like our main recruiting channel. So it's Doc Jock, ZZZ, DocJockZZZ. So if you, honestly, I have a lot of people who ask me questions about sleep on there. You can, of course, buy my book, Meathead, Unraveling the Athletic Brain on Amazon.
It's another another plug, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry. She's shameless at this point.
I mean, honestly, I don't make much money. I make very, very, very little money on my book. It wasn't my intention for writing it. But, you know, I like to share the wealth of knowledge.
I'm just messing with you. It's fine. You're good. No, seriously, thank you for everything you're doing. I know, you know, it's military based, but it has so much more effect on just everybody else, especially, you know, for our police officers and firefighters as well.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are the fighting force of the civilian world. So, I mean, thank you for your service and what you do too. You know, I don't think you hear that enough. We hear that all the time, but you know, I feel like you deserve it more than us because you're in it every day.
We're all on the same team, different uniform. Yeah,
exactly.
So
one team, one team.
That's right. So, ladies and gentlemen, one more time, Major Allison Brager, thank you so much. Seriously.
You're welcome.
You rock, sister.
Thanks. Go Bucks.
Go Bucks. All right. Talk to you, viewers and listeners, next month.